From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Tuesday, October 30th, 2018. And on this day, more and more children with developmental disabilities are having long stays at the ER. We'll look at what's going on. And on the Midcoast, the election could be a referendum on a big new indoor salmon farming operation. That's ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by Coastal Maine Botanical Gardens, presenting Gardens Aglow, where visitors will see the gardens in a whole new light. Tickets available at mainegardens.org.
Next Tuesday's election could signal the fate of a high-tech indoor salmon growing operation that's been proposed for Midcoast Belfast. The development plan's torn a rift in the tight-knit community. The city council's been a strong backer of Nordic Aqua Farm's proposal, but only over repeated objections from opponents who are both vocal and organized. Now, a majority of the council's voting seats are up for grabs, and some see the vote next week as a referendum on the project. Fred Bever has our story.
Norway-based Nordic Aqua Farms says it's ready to invest up to $500 million in the plant, which would occupy some 40 acres near a small river that feeds into Belfast Bay. Project officials say it would be the second largest indoor salmon growing operation in the world, and they promise dozens of jobs, a major boost to the local tax base, and a leadership role for Belfast in a new age of onshore fish farming. Some longtime residents, such as Peggy Differ, are all for it.
I think that it'll really bring some business to Belfast and improve Belfast's economy. That's my true belief in that.
The city council, mindful of Belfast's high property tax rate, was quick to embrace the idea, but it stirred controversy in this roughly 6,000-person community. It's a real mix here. Retirees, back to the landers, artists, young professionals, and a growing workforce for the city's dynamic waterfront.
It was, quite frankly, shocking to see not one single councillor, nor our mayor, stand with the citizens of Belfast.
Project opponents such as Joanne Mosswild, a registered nurse, have turned out in force for council meetings. They've ticked off many fears. The loss of prized woodland near the river, noise, smells, fish disease, wastewater discharge to the bay, and excessive water withdrawal from local aquifers. At a summer hearing, Mosswild echoed many who say councillors were secretive about dealings with project officials, short-circuited city rules, and turned their backs on opponents.
It's still not clear what the rush has been to push this project through amidst such immense community opposition. It is the duty of the council to act on the behalf of us, those who have elected you.
I'm getting to the point where I've got to make this statement. You speak for yourselves.
Two-term city councilor Neil Harkness pushed back.
You do not speak for the community. You do not speak for the majority of citizens of this city. I have heard far more contact from people who support the Nordic Aqua Farm development than people who oppose it.
The debate's pugnacity was growing more and more troubling to the city's 27-year-old mayor, Samantha Parody, a public health nurse and first-time politician. In a recent interview, Parody said she was determined to do something about it.
I've survived sexual and domestic violence, and as a young woman, you know, seeing like verbal aggression among like council and public, that was really uncomfortable for me.
Parody roped resistant fellow councillors into a facilitated discussion that resulted in a new policy for civility at public hearings. Around the same time, councillors agreed to tweak some proposed zoning changes to include more local oversight of the project's water extraction and discharge. And Belfast's local politics have calmed a bit, at least in tone. Linda Buckmaster, a writer and project opponent, says both sides are cooling down the rhetoric.
Some of the more flamethrower types, reactive types, kind of lost interest. Others we took in hand and we said, that's not cool, don't do it. You know, you're not helping the situation. And for the most part, people went, oh, okay.
A recent debate among contenders for the city council was praised from all sides for its civility, and it touched on many issues, not just the salmon facility. But the stakes for Nordic Aqua Farms remain high. Joanne Mosswild, the resident who was publicly rebuked by Councillor Neil Harkness, she's now challenging Harkness for his seat. Two other prominent salmon farm opponents are mounting write-in campaigns for the council. It's a 6-member body, including the mayor, but she votes only in the rare event of a tie, so 3 votes can make the majority.
What happens on election day is absolutely critical.
City Councilor Mike Hurley, a sharp-elbowed project backer and businessman who is not up for re-election this year, says if the opponents are successful, the salmon-growing proposal is likely a no-go.
Now, if only 2 win, and there's 3 who are in favor, I would still look at that as a radical message from the people of Belfast, that they bought the no argument.
Hurley and others say today's fight is reminiscent of a battle 17 years ago over whether Belfast should allow big box retailers such as Walmart into the city. Back then, Hurley was mayor and a leader in the opposition, which was ultimately successful. This time, he remains supportive of the big new business that wants in, and next Tuesday, voters could decide which side of Belfast's history he'll be on. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
Visits to hospital emergency departments are supposed to be brief, so physicians can treat the most acute injuries and illnesses. But Mainers are also seeing other patients that need long-term help. Among them are children with developmental disabilities. They can spend days or even weeks waiting in ERs for placement to receive that long-term help. The state of Maine has hired a consultant now to help address the problem and is holding a series of town hall meetings beginning this week. Patty White reports on the challenges families and hospitals are facing.
In the 10 months Kelly Staples' son Eric has been in residential treatment, she says he's been brought to the ER in crisis at least a half a dozen times. Eric is 13 and has Klinefelter syndrome, a condition that affects intellectual development. He struggles to communicate and regulate emotions, which can lead to destructive behavior. His longest stay in the ER was 12 days. As he cycles from the residential program to the ER and back, Staples says his behavior isn't improving.
If we could just find that person or persons who can really help him learn to communicate, learn to understand what he's hearing. Because when you get older and you damage property, you go to jail. And that's what I'm really, really worried about.
Chrissy Falls' 15-year-old son Isaac is autistic, nonverbal, and has behavior issues. He became so aggressive in February of 2017, she called 911 and says he spent a week in the ER waiting to be admitted to a psychiatric hospital. Part of that time, she says, Isaac had to be restrained by his wrists and ankles.
Eventually, Isaac just kind of gave up and stayed on the stretcher. I don't think he wanted to be put in the restraint. After a few days, they took it off, and I think he just wanted to lay there, and plus they pumped him full of Thorazine. It was pretty hard to watch as well.
Thorazine is a sedative. Isaac is now in residential treatment, but Falls says he spent 2 weeks in the ER last summer because his behavior is deteriorating. Josh Gross's 14-year-old daughter spent an even longer time in the ER. Gross says she has autism, PTSD, and depression, and he brought her to different emergency departments several times last year in crisis.
Ultimately, she ended up at Midcoast in the ED unit there, which she spent 33 days in Midcoast before any placement.
Gross says it took more than a month to find long-term treatment for his daughter because providers initially said she was too acute and aggressive to be admitted into their program. These kinds of experiences of children in crisis who end up stuck in limbo in the ER are familiar to Jeff Austin of the Maine Hospital Association. He says a lack of services is often what drives children and families to the emergency room, and it's also what keeps them there.
So both on the sort of front door, if you will, the emergency room, and the back door when we're trying to discharge people who've received care, it's hard to get people the services they need and get them into us. Setting where they're going to be okay out in the community. We hear about that a lot.
It's not clear how many Maine children with developmental disabilities go to the ER in crisis, but the ER at Midcoast Hospital in Brunswick reports that it sees about 300 to 500 kids annually, with behavioral health as the chief complaint.
But what's more staggering is that the length of stays have gone up.
Dr. Ranjeev Advani, Midcoast ER's medical director, says the length of stay for children who need to be admitted to a psychiatric hospital has more than doubled over the past 4 years, from an average of 20 hours to more than 50 hours. For those waiting for placement in residential treatment, he says, the wait is often longer. Even though Midcoast opened a behavioral health emergency department 3 years ago to better serve these kinds of patients, Advani says the ER is not equipped to provide long-term care.
Really, the emergency department is a good place as a safety net and a good place to calm the crisis down, but really not a good place to be giving definitive or long-term care over days.
Once you're in the emergency department, it becomes really complicated.
Katrina Ringrose is an advocate with Disability Rights Maine. She says long waits in the ER are often due to disagreements between providers about where a child should go, to residential treatment or a psychiatric hospital. As children wait in emergency departments, Ringrose says,
many times children get worse in those settings, and then trying to find placement becomes even more difficult because, you know, the child has deteriorated.
The wait times in emergency rooms underscore a larger underlying problem, the lack of home and community-based care. So says Lydia Dawson of the Maine Association of Community Service Providers. Dawson points out that the waitlist for basic in-home services for children has grown from about 300 a year ago to 450 currently.
I think it goes beyond anecdotal that families start out with that small level of need, and when they're unable to get it met, end up in much more dire circumstances.
Maine's Department of Health and Human Services is contracting with the organization Public Consulting Group to study children's behavioral health services as a result of ongoing negotiations with disability rights. In an email, DHHS spokeswoman Emily Spencer says the study will likely be completed by the end of this year or early next, and will culminate in both short and long-term recommendations for improvement. Spencer says the LePage administration is also requesting federal approval for new adolescent psychiatric residential facilities to alleviate pressure on emergency departments. But Katrina Ringrose of Disability Rights says Maine should keep its attention on building up services in homes and communities.
I think if we were to focus on the higher end and, you know, increase hospital beds or look at creating more institutional settings for kids, we'd be releasing this pressure valve in the wrong direction.
A series of town hall meetings will be held throughout the state over the next 2 weeks to solicit input for the study. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Tuesday, October 30th, 2018. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team. I'm Nora Flaherty.